Okay, well, good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
Last week I talked about hope and directly connected to hope. If you recall, I tried to make the distinction between passive hope, which is sort of a wish that something good is going to happen down the road, versus actively trying to engage the circumstances. And what goes hand in hand in the way that I see it with hope is fear. And fear can be an obstacle to actively engaging our lives or our circumstances. And I'm going to relate this specifically to the pandemic that we're all going through in various ways. So there's a Zen master named Daekwan, Daekwan. And he said, no I, no fear. And you could say also, no self, no fear. And many of you who are familiar with Zen, in Zen, we talk about the great death. And I can remember the first time I saw that, I thought, well, maybe this isn't the place for me. I'm not interested in any great death. But what does that mean? And really, it means we have to let go of the belief that we have that there is a self. So it's that kind of a death. It's letting go of how we see ourselves, how we perceive ourselves. And I'm going to share a little story with you about my first encounter with this. And it goes back probably 30 years or more. Carol, what was the name of the group when we started it in Montclair with John Flynn?
It was Metro Zen.
Metro Zen. Yeah, Metro Zen we started and began by Ray and John Flynn, and then not too much later, myself and Deb Barrett's. So that's how we started out. I don't remember anymore where it was, but it was in the mountains, or at least hills. It was the first time that I was at a retreat where, in retrospect, I really was sitting deeply. One evening, after eating, John, Ray Cicchetti, and I went for a walk. And we were walking silently. We weren't saying anything. And it was dusk, and Venus was shining very brightly in the sky. And without any intention, I just happened to look up, and it was like that, you know, how that happens, just this direct experience of Venus. And I said to Ray, my God, I am Venus. That star is me. Now, this was not a big boom. It was a very brief thing that happened. Ray sort of confirmed in some way the experience that I was having. So on this walk, I went back to the rest of the retreat, really excited and full of energy. And when I first started sitting again, it was hard to even sit because I was really restless, already attached to this experience that I had, which sort of confirmed what a great meditator I am because I had this experience, the old trap that always occurs. But again, I went back, and after a period of time, I started sitting deeply again. And somewhere in one of the periods, and it's hard to explain this, I started to lose track of myself, that I was not in the center of my sitting. It wasn't Carl sitting anymore, it was sitting. But it was almost like pieces of myself were dropping away. And it scared the shit out of me. And my heart was pounding, and it was like I wanted so badly to grab back on to my identity, which I did. But it was really literally terrifying to have that experience, to experience no self. And so this talk, which is about fear, I experienced that deep kind of fear directly. And so I guess I would say that I was terrified to have myself dying. So relating this to fear, and by the way, I'm going to talk about fear in a specific way, which is in the context of Zen. Now, many of you are going to probably think, well, okay, it goes beyond spiritual, it's psychological, it's based on history, personal history and personal experiences. But I think that what I'm going to be talking about is the heart of fear. And so that is that the core of our fear is dying or going out of existence, which we're certainly faced with that possibility in these times. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with it, but this fear is expressed by a koan, and the koan asks the question, who dies? Who is it that dies? Now, under normal circumstances, fear is not a problem. It's actually, it's a healthy thing in general. And it's the awareness of danger, and it's protective in the everyday sense. So in the everyday regular sense, fear is not an enemy. It's a very important part of our makeup. But then the question becomes, when does fear lead to suffering? And that is when we live our lives, like I was describing, in duality, in opposition to everything and everyone else. And the fearlessness arises when our sense of a separate self becomes quiet. When there is no self, when there is no I, we can be fearless. There is nothing to protect. And that's in the spiritual sense, not the everyday sense. And there's a paradox involved, because in order to become fearless about death, we must die. So in order to face death, we have to die. Now, Daido Luri, who most of you know, who's a Roshi, he's a well-known teacher. He died a few years ago, but he was one of the renowned Roshis, and he was an American. He didn't come from. And so he looks at death from the perspective of the past, the present, and the future. And as we know, as many teachers have said, he points out the fact that the present is the only thing that we have, the here and now. And he talks about how fear comes from concern about the future. What will happen? Will I get sick? Will I die? Will I suffer? Who will care for my family? Will I be missed? And that whole list of concerns about the future. And he goes on to say that to live in the present is most important. And that's because what we do in the present will become part of what happens in the future. What we do now becomes part of what happens in the future, which doesn't exist yet. So I was thinking about this in terms of the pandemic that we're going through. And if we think about, okay, so what can we do in the present moment that will be part of our future as we move through this? And so if we quarantine, if we wear a mask, wash our hands, work with feelings of isolation, keeping connected to others, stay in touch with our true nature, these actions in the present moment will affect or be a part of what happens in the future. But as he points out, and as we know, it can only happen now, right? This is where we act now. We keep an eye on the present, what's appropriate to do, and then that comes naturally a part of our future. And this is by Mary Oliver. And she wrote this after her longtime partner died. Someone I love once gave me a box full of darkness. It took me many years to understand that this too was a gift. Maybe death isn't darkness after all, but so much light wrapping itself around us. So, you know, we're not hopeless in the face of fear, and maybe even able to learn something from our fear. And this practice that we have, our Zen practice, is a powerful way to work with our fear. And one of the things that we learn from Zazen is how to watch, how to become familiar with the way in which our mind creates thoughts, and that those thoughts create feelings. And in Zen, you've heard this before too, call this mind makes. And in the case that I'm talking about, we come to see clearly how the mind makes, how the mind creates our fear. The mind says, what will happen when I die? Where will I go when I die? Will I suffer when I die? And every time the mind has one of those thoughts, it creates an emotion. It creates fear in this particular case. We also learn how the mind makes the idea of a separate self that's created by mind. It doesn't exist. It's a thought. It's an idea that we carry with ourselves. And this idea gets reinforced moment to moment by beliefs and feelings, experiences and projections. Over and over and over again, it gets more and more ingrained in the sense of who it is that we are. And it's all created by thinking, followed, as I said, by emotion. And we also realize how much fear can arise if we believe that this self that we have created feels threatened. So as we sit zazen, we can see how our mind is the greatest contributor to our experience of fear. And as we gain insight into the nature of fear, what happens is that its grip softens, right? We sit with it. We see into the nature of it to the point where we realize you see it, experience it. It's just a thought. It's not real. It's a thought that's creating the reality that we are experiencing. So this is a form of insight, seeing into the nature of fear. And we realize as we do this that we really are not lonely, separate cells floating around in the universe. So if we create a new relationship with our mind, it frees us to benefit from the experience of connection that we have with each other and the universe, that really we're not going it alone. Our mind has just tricked us into believing that's the case, that we're separate, that we're not partners, that we're not all connected. And so when we realize also that we're not going it alone, we respond selflessly rather than selfishly. And I've noticed and heard as we go through this pandemic, there's a number of examples of how people are behaving selflessly toward each other, helping each other out, letting somebody go first or ahead in line. All these subtle little things, not dramatic, you know, front page material, but all these things are from people who feel connected with each other and have a less of a grip, a tight grip on I am a separate self. That sort of expands or has been expanding, I think, in this pandemic. And so finally, the practice can help us to see things as they arise before they become full blown. If we have that kind of relationship with our minds, we can head things off at the pass, and it doesn't have to become an emergency. It doesn't have to be something which is out of control. And so our zazen teaches us to slow down and be less reactive and experience things in what I would say is a more subtle way, not a big panic, a big wanting to control things, but a more subtle experience and seeing the way this, these thinkings are creating fear and having a more intimate relationship with that process, which reduces the fear that we have. So the zazen teaches us to slow down. Both our thinking and our physiology become slower, softer, and less reactive. And in the end, what we start to do, we catch things when they are still manageable, when we haven't been overcome by our fear. Now, this is a little story that takes place in 1360. And it's on a winter morning in 1360. That the famous Zen master Kozan gathered all his students, and Kozan, who was 77, told them that upon his death, they should bury his body, perform no ceremony, and hold no service in his memory. And then, as the story goes, sitting in the traditional Zen posture, he wrote the following poem. Empty-handed, I entered the world. Barefoot, I leave it. My coming, my going, two simple happenings that got entangled. One last thing I want to share with you, which is a beautiful story. And this is from a book called It's All Part of the Dance that was written by my friend Alan, who we both wrote the book Embracing Life as It Is. And so this is a story. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Sylvia Bornstein, but she's a popular Buddhist writer and also teacher. And she studied with a teacher named Dipa Ma, D-I-P-A-M-A. And she was the co-founder of Spirit Rock Meditation Center and also the teacher there. So this is a story that she tells. She writes of her father's 7-year struggle with multiple myeloma which is an incurable cancer. And here's her story. One day when his illness was quite advanced, his spirit seemed particularly flagging. The day loomed long before us, and I said, "Let's go to a movie." And he looked at me, seemingly incredulous, and said, "You know I'm dying." And I said, "Yes, I know, but not today." So we saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, and we both loved it. And we had dinner at the Pacific Cafe, his favorite restaurant. So when my father was dying, I remained at his bedside for his final days. The last few days of his life, he was primarily in a coma from which he would rouse from time to time. We knew he was dying, and we were making him as comfortable as we could, waiting for his last breath. And every once in a while, he would seem to breathe his last. His body would shake, and he'd have some kind of apnea that people do when they're dying. And I would hold his hand and say my prepared speech, "Go to the light. Now is your chance to get out of this body." I'm pleased that I did that. Those are all the right things to say when someone is dying. "You've done a good job in this lifetime. Everybody loved you. It's time to move on. You don't need this old body anymore." And each time he would struggle with his last breath, I would give him the speech again. And then he would relax and fall asleep, and I would go back to waiting. And very near the end, he began a siege of apnea, and I leapt to my feet, beginning my talk about "go to the light." He opened his eyes, and he looked at me and said quite clearly, "You know, it's not that big of a deal." So that's the talk on fear, and thanks for listening.